Presented by Facebook.
Hello and happy Friday. I'm Adrienne Hurst with your Playbook Daily Briefing. Which is a hotter ticket, Beyoncé's first post-pandemic concert or Biden's first address to Congress? The answer should obviously be Beyoncé, but maybe not to the nerds on Capitol Hill, where Democrats are already playing furious musical chairs to score one of the precious few seats at Biden's joint address. The April 28th event will have strict safety protocols in place even as the Hill slowly returns to normal. That means likely just 200 lawmakers, administration officials, and staff will be allowed inside the House chamber, a way smaller crowd than the typical primetime presidential speech. Party leaders have the unenviable task of divvying up the tickets, and they're already getting requests from lawmakers. We're told the situation is downright contentious. One Democratic source told Playbook that some in leadership didn't even want to have this address because they knew this was going to happen. People will feel jilted if they don't get an invite, and Pelosi can't afford that now because her majority is so narrow. Here's what else is driving the day today. Refugee caps. Progressives started out with a nudge, privately telling Biden officials they needed to make good on Joe's campaign pledge to lift Trump's historically low cap on refugees. Now they're saying, no more Mr. Nice Guy. This morning, a group of lawmakers are taking their demands public, urging Biden to move now to fix a system they call unacceptably draconian and discriminatory. The group, led by Representative Ilhan Omar, herself a one-time refugee, is sending a letter to the White House this morning. The letter comes after CNN reported that the holdup on lifting the cap was over concerns that it looked bad politically. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki danced around the issue at yesterday's press briefing, saying she didn't have an update on the timeline, but that Biden remains committed to raising the refugee cap. Also today, the Senate is exploring a two-pronged approach to infrastructure. Yesterday, Biden ally Chris Coons floated the idea, a bipartisan bill on core infrastructure spending and a second bill that includes all the other stuff Biden's proposed in his American Jobs Plan and the forthcoming American Families Plan. Now, here's where this idea could run into some trouble. The two parties might actually be able to agree on spending. The House Transportation Chairman sounded pretty bullish about the $600 to $800 billion number floated by Republican Senator Shelley Moore Capito. Pete DeFazio said, that's not an insignificant amount of money, particularly for the things she's focused on. Roads, bridges, highways, wastewater, and drinking water. The problem is, Democrats want infrastructure spending to cover a lot more than that. And even if they can agree on what highways, bridges, and airports to fix, the two sides are miles apart on how to pay for it. Several Republicans are already balking at Coons' two-step, saying they're not interested in a bipartisan deal if it means Democrats then pass a giant reconciliation bill. On the flip side, several Dems dislike the two-bill option because they fear the second bill might never happen. And the clock is ticking. White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain is telling members they can't take forever on this. And yesterday, members of the so-called G20, that bipartisan group of Senate moderates, were split over whether to work together on a smaller package. The group ended with no decision and plans to speak again next week. The bottom line here is that prospects for a bipartisan bill are now higher, but the most likely scenario remains a huge reconciliation bill that's essentially too big to fail, because of the damage it would do to the Biden presidency, and one that every Democrat, including Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, feel obligated to support. Meanwhile, in Texas, we're almost 3 months into Biden's time in office, and his administration has blown past a self-imposed deadline to review resources for one of the most enduring symbols of Trump's presidency. That's right, the border wall. This week, the U.S. government seized 6 acres from a family in Hidalgo County, Texas, the result of a Trump-era court case designed to help construct the wall. The Biden administration never withdrew from or asked to dismiss the case, according to documents and interviews. Administration officials said they didn't do so because they're still in the midst of a review of federal resources used to build the wall. But that review, which was put into place through a proclamation Biden signed on his first day in office, it was supposed to be finished by March 20th, and officials have offered no timetable for when it'll be completed. A member of the family whose land was taken told Politico's Anita Kumar, "I'm very, very disappointed in Joe Biden. I thought he was a man of his word, but apparently he's not keeping his word." And a person who consults with the White House on immigration policy said they're getting frustrated, telling Politico they can have all the excuses they want, but it's real dicey to look at what they're doing right now. It's a lot of stuff Trump was doing. Finally, about that Trump-Russia story, or one of them, remember the story of Russia offering bounties to Afghan militants who killed U.S. soldiers? Biden famously used it to slam Trump at a presidential debate. Well, it turns out it might not have been true. Psaki said yesterday a review by the Intelligence Committee determined its veracity with only low to moderate confidence. The admission undercuts Biden's narrative about this on the campaign trail. He repeatedly raised the possibility of Russian bounties as further evidence that Trump treated Russia with kid gloves at the expense of the military. The press secretary's remarks came the same day Biden levied new, unrelated sanctions on Putin's government and expelled 10 Russian diplomats from the U.S. That was in response to election interference and cyber espionage, among other actions. Some lawmakers are still urging Biden to go further here, and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said yesterday, this is the start of a new U.S. campaign against Russian malign behavior. TGIF, here's a look at Biden's Friday. He'll get the president's daily brief at 9:50. Biden will host Japanese Prime Minister Suga for an official working visit at 1:30 p.m. in the Oval Office. The two will hold an expanded bilateral meeting at 2:30, and at 4:15, they'll hold a news conference in the Rose Garden. Biden will leave the White House at 5:30 and head to Wilmington, Delaware. VP Kamala Harris will hold a bilateral meeting with Suga at 11 a.m. in the Vice President's ceremonial office. The White House COVID-19 response team and public health officials will hold a briefing at 10:30. Press Secretary Jen Psaki will brief at 11. Subscribe to the Playbook newsletter at politico.com/playbook. And to hear the very first episode of Politico's brand new narrative podcast, make sure you're subscribed to Playbook Deep Dive. The first episode drops next Friday, and here's a little teaser. I'm Adrienne Hurst. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.
Sometimes truth is stranger than fiction, right?
Boy, is it ever, you know? Is it ever.
What's it like behind the scenes in our nation's capital? Like the side that most people never get to see.
D.C. is a
place where...
Is the town filled with status-obsessed, narcissistic, backbiting people.
Everybody has an agenda.
When someone calls to curse me out, it's not fun, and people should stop doing that. Didn't your mama tell you to be nice?
At Politico, we hear it all. And coming soon, you will too.
The old cliche that Washington is Hollywood for ugly people does still ring true.
So while people might not wear great suits, a lot of it might be polyester and maybe not well fitted, you just have to be aware that there is money involved in everything in Washington.
Power.
And a lot of it.
Arm twisting and influence very quickly muddy what folks intended to do or wanted to do.
Presenting Politico's new podcast, Playbook Deep Dive, where Playbook insiders spill their secrets, gossip, lies, bad behavior.
Oh, actually, you should probably cut that because that might be illegal.
And everything else that happens behind closed doors.
And if anybody knows Lisa Murkowski, it's that she walks extremely fast.
Okay.
And she knows how to get in and out without people seeing her.
I found it incredibly difficult and awkward to ask a U.S. congressman if he was an arsonist in front of his wife.
We're in high heels. We can't do it anymore. We literally take our high heels off. We're barefoot in the middle of D.C. How disgusting is that? But we've got to find this woman.
Often at the end of the day, all of those backbiting people are doing things for a more just cause than most things in Hollywood.
And underneath all the theater, the backstabbing, the strategy.
You come here to change your country for the better and to do good things for the nation.
The biggest reason these stories matter is simple, because there are real life consequences.
I just kept hearing gunfire. And I lie there. I was lying on my left side with my head down, trying to pretend that I was dead.
And sometimes, stories that stop you in your tracks. As when Representative Jackie Speier relived her near-death experience.
And I was shot 5 times, and I looked at the right side of my body. I knew I was dying.
Playbook Deep Dive is a new weekly podcast from Politico. Those juicy, weird, insider, important stories in politics are what we're going to be telling each week.
I don't know if you saw this, and I'm looking at a piece by Politico.
Politico has this story.
Featuring reporters from all around the Politico newsroom and characters from all across Washington, D.C. So please join us for Politico Deep Dive, coming April 23rd.
Have a look at this in Politico.
It's been 25 years since lawmakers passed comprehensive internet regulations. But the internet has changed a lot since then, and it's time for an update. That's why Facebook supports updated internet regulations to set clear guidelines for addressing today's toughest challenges, like protecting privacy, fighting misinformation, reforming Section 230, and more. See our progress on key issues and what's next at about.fb.com/regulations.